Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL Podcast. I'm Gary Brantley.
And I'm Connor Orr.
Jenny Brentis is out on assignment. I don't know. That sounds like something we should say right now, right?
Yeah. And missed. Obviously.
Yes. We will give you no further details.
Yeah.
There's no mystery as to why Jenny isn't here. She simply isn't here. She'll be back next show.
And mind your own business.
We have a Week 12 Sunday to run through. So many mistakes this week. So much poor play. We're going to criticize our social bettors whenever we can. And we're going to start with the Sunday night game, which was close. People like when games are close. It was not very well played. And there were a lot of things to worry about on both sides of this. I don't know. Who do you want to start with, Connor? You want to break down the Ravens stuff or the Browns stuff?
Let's start with the Browns. And really, where do you start, right? I mean, I think the next-gen stats number that they showed on the broadcast was a little bit misleading when they said that the Ravens had gone only had gone eight plus men in the box 14% of the time. I think it was probably a little bit more than that, depending on how you would count it, right? Or, you know, maybe they brought guys in right afterwards to sort of, like, disguise the looks or whatever. But the Ravens basically played like an eight-man front the whole game and were like, hey, Baker, like, beat us. And he couldn't do it. And, you know, I understand that there are injury issues involved here. They're certainly maybe not as high wattage of a receiving core as you once had. Maybe you never really had a high wattage receiving core and you were just under the impression that you did. But this was bad. You know, they couldn't move the ball. I mean, he had mistakes, but it should have been worse. Like, as bad as this game was, it should have been worse. And so I think that was bad. And the other thing, too, that really just sort of immediately struck me with the Browns is, like, you cannot, with that defense, get a critical stop. Like, yes, you picked off Lamar Jackson four times, but your offense gives you nothing to show for it. And then on the downs where you absolutely need to get off the field at the very end of the game, you can't get off the field. But then again, what would Baker Mayfield have done anyway? I don't know. So I think you're in between a rock and a hard place here.
Yeah, you had the Ravens go 7 for 15 on third down. So you also got the 1 for 1 on fourth down in what was it was kind of a mistake heavy first half for the defense, but I thought they settled in pretty well. And you saw some of the mid blitzes that the Dolphins kept on throwing at Lamar Jackson the last time we saw him. You saw that from the Browns, and quite frankly, you just saw Lamar Jackson make a couple of superhuman throws. You know, they got their touchdown because he did that twice to Mark Andrews, and that's how you get points. There is an out when Lamar Jackson is your quarterback and you're being out-schemed and out-executed. There's not so much of an out for the Browns on their side of the ball. And look, you're absolutely right, Connor. I mean, Baker Mayfield didn't play well. I'm not sure anyone in his position would be terribly comfortable with what they're seeing out on the field right now, though. His receivers are just not open, and part of that is a lack of explosiveness. Maybe they just need to build in some, like, good old-fashioned man-beater concepts and try and create some separation for these guys on their behalf, but it was a little bit eye-opening. I love Tyus Bowser. Austin Hooper's got to be able to separate from Tyus Bowser. David Njoku has to be able to get away from Tyus Bowser. I mean, he's a linebacker. Those are your most explosive weapons outside of maybe Jarvis Landry, who he's pretty good sometimes when he's a complimentary piece, but it's just not good what's going on with this offense right now.
Yeah, and I don't know necessarily how you fix it. Like you said, you could throw in some man-beater concepts there. I mean, obviously the run game is not working, but that is what... It's almost a reverse 49ers scenario, right? Where every game for the rest of the season now, teams are just going to do that to you. They're going to line up eight men in the box, and they're going to punch you in the mouth until you prove that you can handle it otherwise. And I don't know... You know, the whole thing was just crazy. Like, if Baker Mayfield's shoulder is a problem, why are you slamming him into the line on fourth on fourth and short sneaks. Like, you know, nothing about this team makes sense right now. Like, and on the flip side, if JOK is doing such a good job spying Lamar Jackson, why isn't that something that you're doing consistently? And, like, why are we only doing this a couple times a game? I don't know. I mean, I don't get what's going on right now. It feels, like, functionally broken in a lot of different ways.
They're searching for it. And, look, they won the turnover battle in this one, actually, 4-2. They also missed a field goal. I consider a missed field goal basically a turnover at that point. But again, it's kind of fitting. Their two turnovers are just spectacularly bad. Baker Mayfield, on a screenplay that was, it was dialed up perfectly. I mean, it might have been a... You're going to have Kareem Hunt with a head of steam and two blockers in front of him. Maybe he gets to the end zone, maybe he doesn't, but whatever is going to happen, it's going to be good. And Baker Mayfield just kind of panics and double clutches and then manages to strip sack himself. And then Jarvis Landry. I mean, you know what? It was kind of cute when he last week against the Lions floats around and ends up scrambling like a quarterback and running for a touchdown. And he tried that again against the Ravens. And, you know, they're just like, yeah, we'll just take the ball. But don't do that. Don't do that, Jarvis Landry. You are not a quarterback.
They would have been like at this point, and this isn't, I hate to criticize Baker Mayfield because I don't know how injured he is. Like, I don't know how bad it is. It seems like from his camp, they're letting on like it's a lot worse than we think it is. But the fact that the Browns are trotting him out there means that they think he's better than a healthy Case Keenum. So I don't know what the math is here. But, like, I would have almost rather them sign Cam Newton and just run quarterback power. Like, you would be more successful at this point than trying to do what you're doing now, which is just not working. And like we said before, I mean, you know, there were two bad turnovers, but it should have been worse, right? Like, you know, you mentioned Baker Mayfield sort of airmailing that pass to Hooper. There's that other, like, third and short or third and long where he threw it short of the sticks and his receiver had to, like, wrestle it away from somebody else in coverage. That should have been a pick. I mean, this could have been, like, I mean, as bad as this game was across, like, all spectrums, like, it could have been, like, arguably the worst game in, like, modern NFL history.
The Ravens offense, yeah, they did not hold up their end of the bargain here in this one. Obviously, the defense ended up coming in with a good game plan and getting it done there. This was the second straight game we've seen Lamar Jackson just not have a whole lot of answers, at least on a consistent basis. Now, he made those two out-of-structure throws to Mark Andrews to get them on the board. And obviously, you know, like I said, Lamar Jackson is your quarterback. You have a chance to make some unexpected plays and sort of just steal a couple of plays over the course of a game. But that was kind of it. And, you know, I'm looking at the final numbers here. If you take away the two kneel downs, you have 41 rushes for 150, which is, you know, I mean, it's good to rush it 41 times. It means you're probably leading in the game, but that's not terribly efficient offensive football at this point.
The counter to that would be in blind defense of Lamar Jackson, you're going to get these games. You're going to get, like, these clusters of games. But he always seems to work around a defense. And the Browns, again, are a team, I think, that uniquely drafted players to stop him because they knew he was going to, you're going to face him twice a year. This is always going to be a difficult matchup for Lamar Jackson. And I think he comes out like a house on fire from here on out. Like, I think he's got some more favorable matchups. I think things are going to get better. But the beauty of this offense is that even when it's really bad, and today it was really bad, if you can hang around, even a plodding run game that continually forces defenses to make choices on every single down is going to win you games. Like, at the end, the Browns couldn't get off the field on basically, you know, a college-style, like, read option play, right? Where you're picking whether you're going at the quarterback or you're going at the running back, and Lamar Jackson just splits the defenders and gets a first down. And even when nothing else is working and everything else is covered, like, you still have the ability to inch forward and pick up valuable first downs just by virtue of this being the foundation of your offense. So I do think, like, as bad as this is, you do see the inherent value in it in such a mucky game as this.
It was. It was. And that last drive was probably the best offensive football we saw all night.
That's true.
That was 11 plays, took 5 minutes, 18 seconds off the clock, and also burned the Browns' last 2 timeouts at that point. So when they needed to get it done, they got it done.
Best team in the AFC right now,
mm-hmm.
allegedly.
Record-wise, if you pay attention to win-loss records, which I do not.
Rams, Packers.
All right, Connor. I mean, this is, we'll start with the Packers side of it. It's a nice, convincing win for the Packers, who now go into their bye week, sitting at 9-3. No one else is even 500 in that division. Whatever they need to get ironed out on the offensive side, they have time to do it. They're going to be getting Za'Darius Smith and Jaire Alexander back at some point, probably in December. So, I don't know if you would really underline anything as great in this game, except they sort of got a disjointed, mistake-prone opponent, and they took advantage.
Yeah, and I just still think, like, I still think a part of us is looking at the Packers like we look at the Chiefs, especially because we saw the capabilities of what the Packers could be in that new offense last year. But, like, it's not going to be like that anymore, right? And it's not going to be beautiful every Sunday. But that is sort of the underlying beauty of this system, is, like, they're going to be able to get functional points. They're going to be able to score when they need to score. And, it's not going to be, a laser light show, but you're going to be able to edge out your opponents. You're going to be able to wear them down a little bit more effectively. And that's what they did on Sunday.
I was going to say the biggest issue for Green Bay right now might be the kicking game. It's Mason Crosby. Poor Mason Crosby missed another one. This one from 42. So he is running away with a league lead in missed kicks at this point. But as far as the Rams go, and look, this is probably going to be a storyline we talk about for, longer than we want to. But they lose Robert Woods. They gain Odell Beckham Jr. And certainly in the short term, that's a minus right there. I mean, Robert Woods was so important to what they do, both his value as a guy you can move around the formation and just as a guy who gets to a spot where the quarterback knows where he is going to be when he delivers the ball. And they're not just quite there with Odell Beckham right now. And what you have is just, it really is. It's out of sync. It's just a disjointed offense right now. And, it's a bit of a bummer to see it still going on a little bit coming out of the bye week as well.
You could see it on a couple of the plays. Like, it was interesting just sort of watching Odell, and, NFL Game Pass is the worst product on planet Earth and just a raging hellfire. But I'll be able to, say this with a little bit more authority on Tuesday when I get to see the All-22. But looking at him on plays where Matthew Stafford, where he's clearly, first or second on that read for Matthew Stafford, I think there's just stuff that they're both still getting acclimated to, and like he's looking at Odell Beckham, like, there's like quick slants, right, where like Odell Beckham is past the hash and Matthew Stafford is throwing it like at the hash, right, so he's got to come back for the ball, but like you would guess that Matthew Stafford wants him at the hash on that play or something like that. A lot of times they'll use like landmarkers on the field and stuff for plays that they're running, and so I just think, if you're Sean McVay, I think you're trying to bake him in maybe a little too quickly. We saw that that first game right after the trade, I think it was the 49ers game, right? Where you had Odell Beckham in the backfield, and then you just look at Odell Beckham, and then everything draws up, and then that created that little cushion for Cooper Kupp. Like, that's kind of the extent of what you can do with him effectively right now, I feel like. There's not a lot of, he's not going to be Robert Woods. He's not necessarily a burner, never really was. And so, I just don't think if it was a one-for-one swap. I thought it was going to be a little more seamless than this, but I think that's also naive.
Yeah, I mean, look, the lack of depth is showing up a little bit. They don't have a whole lot they can do as far as, like, two tight ends go. So it's kind of like, you got Kupp, you got Beckham, you got Van Jefferson, and that's going to be your base there, along with Higby and whoever your back is. And it's either going to work or you're going to be in trouble. And this was just a Sunday where it just wasn't really working. And look, the sloppiness gets baked into this. They had a strip sack. They lost a fumble on a muff punt where for the first time in seems like forever. They didn't send Cooper Kupp back there, and a rookie receiver ends up fumbling it away. And, you know, they give up a pick six on what's, you know, not a great route by Cooper Kupp, but also just a really nice play by Russell Douglas to make that play at that point. But, yeah, you know, the good news if you're a Rams fan is obviously there's some margin for error if you're in the NFC. You know, the chance of winning the division might slip away a little bit, but we've seen how well teams play on the road, and you just get into the tournament and sort of figure it out then. And it's better to be struggling with this stuff around Thanksgiving than struggling with this stuff around New Year's. They have Jacksonville coming up, and they've got a little bit of time to sort things out here.
Yeah, Jacksonville's always a nice opponent to sort things out on, you know, given that just the general preparation there is not going to be as such of a, like a regular NFL opponent, so that it's kind of a good way to work the kinks out. But I'm stunned really with this team. It reminds me a little bit of, since our colleague Jenny Vrentis isn't here, I'll be the one to make the 2010 Jets reference in her honor. I also, by the way, as an aside, had some parsnips for dinner tonight, and that is one of Jenny's favorite things. First time I ever had them in like a roasted form. Phenomenal.
Nice.
So the kudos to you, Jenny. That was inspired by you, and can't wait to tell you all about it. But so 2010 Jets and 2011, you know, everybody made this gigantic deal, right, out of Rex Ryan figuring out, air quotes, that you had to jam the crap out of Rob Gronkowski at the line of scrimmage, and then it just stopped everything that the Patriots were able to do. Like, Rob Gronkowski was clearing out large swaths of field for Tom Brady, and Rex Ryan's like, well, what happens if we just don't let him do that? And then, oh my God, the whole offense stopped. And it blows my mind that, like, teams still aren't doing that with Cooper Kupp. Like, don't they realize, like, if they pull the plug on this, the entire thing goes down the drain? Like, there's people who have left the Rams that are like, yeah, I mean, if he's not there, the whole thing just gets destroyed. Like, in some ways, I'm like, okay, cool, they're going to figure this out. And in other ways, I'm like, oh my God, they're going to get figured out, and it could get worse.
Vikings 49ers.
So yeah, the 49ers get another win here in very Kyle Shanahan style. Another game that is dominated by the run game. They control the clock. This is their third straight win and their third straight game with 37 plus minutes of possession here at this point. A whole lot of Eli Mitchell and a whole lot of Deebo Samuel sort of carrying the load here for the 49ers. And in what you know, it kind of in the same vein as the Packers, they kind of took advantage of some Vikings mistakes when it was all said and done. But they end up outlasting them in a 34-26 win. And look, this isn't on the team. It's always nice to win. It's even better to win stylistically the way you want to win. And that's where the 49ers are right now. And obviously, you know, we don't need to go nuts with the playoff picture stuff quite yet. But, you know, this is a team everyone was writing off a month ago. Now they're 6-5. They are firmly in the wild card. I don't know, what do we call it? They're just wild card at this point. They're just in as far as the standings go. So it's a good spot for the 49ers to be right now.
They're in the safari zone, which is a good place for them right now. If anyone gets that reference, please email me. But yeah, I mean, this is my outside candidacy for George Kittle as an MVP candidate. Look at how alive the run game becomes when you get him back into the lineup. And you can just go out there and punch teams in the mouth. And that's what Kyle Shanahan loves to do. You know, it looks so dizzying, but it's three different run plays that are run 65 different ways. And George Kittle is just anchoring that. Kyle Juszczyk and Trent Williams is probably the best offensive lineman in the NFL. And so you're just beating the crap out of other teams, and it's great. Life is good when you can do that. And so hopefully they can keep that going. And like we've said, but like the run game is gaining steam in terms of our understanding of what that does to other people's wills and their physical wind and stuff. And I think that these last few weeks, they've just been able to blow teams off the ball and to have, you know, Elijah Mitchell look great, but Deebo Samuel, I think, is the X factor there too. I mean, you know, we've seen his yards after the catch prowess for years. And then to be able to put him in the shotgun like that and let him take handoffs has just been devastating.
Deebo Samuel looks like Raheem Mostert at this point, the way he had that sort of breakout at the end of the 2019 season, the way they're using him in the backfield. And of course, he also has 1,000 yards receiving on the season, which is also very, that's very good. It's very good by Deebo Samuel. As far as the Vikings go, this was the rare game where Kirk Cousins, was asked to score 8 points in like a minute 45 at the end of the game and did not accomplish the feat. They end up just, turning over on downs and going out on this one. But, you know, this is still a Vikings team. Plenty of time to go here. You know, this one did get away from them, but it still just sort of shapes up as a team that's going to be right there in the NFC wildcard race when it's all said and done. Although the, you know, the big blow in this one was they lose Dalvin Cook to some sort of, at this point, undiagnosed knee injury. And perhaps by the time you guys hear this on Monday morning, you'll know what that injury is.
Yeah, be sure to tell us. Reach back into time and let us know.
We stop after we record. We don't pay attention to anything for 7 days.
We're just as surprised as you. When you wrote your Football Things column last year, I remember you referencing the line from American Dad, where what does he say when they're playing Pokemon and you're wasting your Charizard?
Oh, you're wasting your Charizard. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. You know, it's weird because, like, I think that the Vikings are wasting their Charizard, right? It's not Kirk Cousins. It's just like every game that you watch, you're getting these phenomenal, like, balletic plays from your wide receivers, and you have two of them, you know? And it's crazy to me that they're not, like, I don't know, what's a better number here? Like 8-3, you know, I don't know. Like a better team than they are now. And I think that the Vikings will probably change things up if they don't go deep into the playoffs and make a run here. But I think that's one of those things where it's like, you're getting A+ quarterback play, you're getting A+ receiving play, and like nothing makes sense. Like, why isn't this team really good?
Yeah. I mean, look, defensively, they just weren't quite there in this one. The whole defensive line was basically out. Sheldon Richardson was really the only guy who you'd normally have on the field for a full complement of snaps who was actually in there, and he was playing out of position. He was playing a lot of defensive end in this one. So, but as far as the season goes, you're right. I mean, they got into so many games where they just let opponents kind of hang around, and yeah, it's fun when Kirk Cousins goes out there and wins it for you in the end, but you also had like two or three games where it's like you could have just won. You could have just, like, won and then just, like, left and gone home, like, 20 minutes earlier and just been done with it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's and you know, so I don't know. I mean, I think that last spot in the NFC is obviously up for grabs, but it's been really fun to watch. It's been – the games have certainly been fun to cover because they last about 2 hours with the way the 49ers are just, like, destroying people in the run game. But I will tell you what. I mean, you know, I don't want – the 49ers in the playoffs. Like, if I'm a team that, you know, whatever, you earn that number 2 seed, that would just be the worst thing in the world to see them, you know, storming down the pike here, you know, and running the ball like they are, just really kind of like taking opponents' souls here on a pretty regular basis.
Buccaneers Colts.
I will hold back on the Colts for just a minute here because I really have a very sad eulogy I want to sort of read for their season, and we'll go from there. But I guess we'll start on the Bucs side of this. They are getting healthier defensively, and I think you're going to see this kind of like last year where they sort of come together. I'm not quite sure what they have offensively. I mean, I'm sure what they have. I'm just not quite sure they get to the same level they were early in this season, or even like last year, if you go back to the Super Bowl, which was one of their best offensive performances. I don't know what they have without Antonio Brown at this point. In this one, they went, it was a whole lot of Rob Gronkowski, and he was like classic Gronk in this game, not just the bad USAA commercials that play, 78 times throughout every 3-hour game, but I mean, his run after catch stuff, he looked like he was like 25 years old again.
Yeah, can we pick apart the USAA thing for 1 second? Like, I am like, I just want to dive in here for a brief second. Like, I have like 3 questions here. One, like, if none of us can have it, which is fine, like, why are there so many commercials? Like, why are you spending like millions of dollars on advertising for something that, like, you're making it a point to know for me to know that I can't have it, which is fine. Again, I don't want it. You know, I mean, I'm sure it's great insurance, but like, it's not for me. And so
it's an unusual business model. Definitely an unusual business model. Yeah.
So it's like, I have a tea that is only allowed to be enjoyed by people who are 5'11". And like, so I'm going to market that with like very expensive people. And like, you know, I don't get it. I don't understand it. And I don't know why, if you're Rob Gronkowski, you want to play the role of the person who's essentially trying to like forge your military credentials to get insurance. Like none of that makes any sense to me.
Yeah, stolen valor is a thing that like that I would not joke about.
Yeah,
like, because you know. It's like there's a you go through the YouTube. There's some nasty stuff on there. But yeah, they just kind of made it into a joke on a commercial, and it's like, oh Gronk, like no, you can't. That's not cool. You can't do that.
Yeah, but yes, no, I agree with you that on a totally serious point that without that functional sort of third option, and it's insane that they needed that, right? You know, I think we give a lot of credit, and rightfully so. Like, I feel like I'm constantly trying to delegitimize what Tom Brady is doing, but like, you know, and you feel weird saying, well, without all these nine guys, he's not as successful, but the offense doesn't work as well. And that's just like the fact of the matter right now. And so I don't know. The offense does look like it's sputtering a little bit.
Man, the Colts are just, the beef is just going out the window here.
Yeah.
This team is just devastating me because really, I mean, if this was all like, I don't know, 12 weeks of preseason here and we were just about to ramp up the regular season, I would be like, the Colts are as good as anyone in the AFC. They really have played so well and they just figure out these really strange ways to lose games. And I thought when they lost the Titans at home, I thought the officials took that one away from them. There were a couple of flags in this one that are just, those pass interference flags are just devastating. Neither should have been thrown, and they just, you know, they lead to points. They lead to free points for your opponent, and that's kind of what it came down to when it was all said and done. This was a game that they were leading 24-14 at halftime and getting the ball to open the second half, and it looked like they might just win this by 3 touchdowns, but the officiating was an issue. Turning the ball over was a big issue, but again, like, just the turnovers were not particularly sloppy. There was a strip sack. That's never good. There
fumble
was
after
a
the catch.
Yeah, there was a downfield throw. Antoine Winfield just made an incredible play on it and took it away from Michael Pittman. Just a phenomenal defensive play. And then, yeah, Nyheim Hines, like, muffs a fair catch punt, and you give away 3 possessions and lose a game by 1 possession is what it comes down to.
Yeah, and especially there in the second quarter when you had the it was that like bomb of a touchdown to Doolin, and then you come back on the other side and you pick Tom Brady off like near the end zone. It's like, you know, again, you're going to need more than that swing in general to beat the Buccaneers. But mm-hmm. I mean, at that point, you were just like, okay, like you have this team on the mat, just like step on their neck. And it just seemed like they, for some reason, didn't. But you're a fan of sample size, and I do feel like if you brought this same team out into the NFL again next year, like, they could easily be, I don't know, again, I'm struggling with math here on the fly. I'm trying to add up to 12 better numbers than 6-6, you know, but they would be that. They would be, you know, I don't know, 9-3?
Just say 12-0. It's just easier. Vikings would be 11-0. Yeah, that's where we're going with this show.
Yeah.
Steelers Bengals.
All right, this was I think the most lopsided game of the day as far as the way it unfolded and the fact that just the Steelers were at no point competitive in this game. Like, this was a blowout from the time it started, and I don't really know what to say about the Steelers anymore other than there's just no way you can get fixed. And coming into the season, I kind of thought, like, okay, well, they're going to have something up their sleeve that's different than last year. And they don't. They tried to sort of get the run game going again, and it hasn't worked most weeks, no matter how much they sort of force-feed Najee Harris. But, you know, they had T.J. Watt back. They had Minkah Fitzpatrick back. And just defensively, they could not hold up in this game. I mean, this was a just flat-out, full-fledged blowout.
Yeah, and to get beaten up by Joe Mixon the way that they did, I think is just, like, that to me, you know, not like the wobbling Ben Roethlisberger or the punchless offense, but, like, to get really, like, walloped by Joe Mixon like they did was probably the most out-of-character thing that we've seen, and that is a backbreaker for a season, right? You know, that's like one of those games where you kind of just, you know, you throw up the white flag at that point, and there's really, like, there's no coming back from it when you're, like, pantsed that publicly. You know, that's like a really crappy thing. And then you just have, like, you know, Ben Roethlisberger just, like, airmailing balls, like, you know, throwing, like, back shoulder fade passes on go balls that are just, you know, and the whole thing just looks, it just doesn't look good. It doesn't look right.
They are trending toward, on a rushing average, a per carry average, they are trending toward the worst season in franchise history, and that goes back to right now they're the worst ever since they became the Steelers, or they were coming into this week, and then they got a little bit worse. And wow. The only season that was worse was in 1934 when they were still the Pittsburgh Football Pirates. So that's where we are.
Year.
And that, that was 1934 was a very good year for all of us.
Yeah.
I hope nothing horrible happened in 1934, and I just sound like a total jerk right now.
Quick, Wikipedia that.
Yes. But, I mean, you're totally right, and that's kind of been this sort of underlying thing that almost the poor performance of the offense is kind of distracted from this. The defense, the run defense, has just been terrible. It's been really bad, and the linebacker play has not been good enough. Devin Bush is not back to where he was, but they're getting gashed on the ground, and, you know, it's too many flaws for this team to overcome. And again, they were just, I can't emphasize it enough, they were just completely outclassed by the Bengals. I mean, this was like a college football game and, you know, whatever, you know, Alabama, Vanderbilt or something like that, where one team is just had no chance to win it at any point.
Yeah. On the 1934 front, bad year for a lot of people, you know, but also the year that, like, Donald Duck was invented.
There you go.
And so, and then Rudyard Kipling, he was awarded some sort of poetry prize.
Yeah,
just sort of like, you know, there was a French political crisis. So, and the Soviet Union joined the League of Nations. So, you know, there's some stuff going on there.
Okay,
you know, but you know, just but altogether kind of bad in general. when you think about Europe, but so yeah.
I've got to come up with a take as to why secretly 1934 was actually a good year. That's what I'm going to work on this week.
I think it'd be extremely hard to argue. but I don't know. I'm with you. When they drafted Najee Harris, right, and, you know, they started putting him at wide receiver in training camp, which every team with a rookie running back did that year to try to, like, I don't know, you know, the Jaguars were doing that too with Travis Etienne. But something with me, and you and I are both fans of Matt Canada and the way that he kind of rolls out his backfield stuff. And we were like, okay, something's going on here. And then you're right. It's just like, nope, this is this is incredibly drab.
This is the thing I hated last year. There's nothing else going on.
Surprise.
Titans, Patriots.
All right, so the Patriots are just absolutely on fire right now. And by the way, next Monday night, that is the everyone you know thinks Bucks Patriots was the game of the year because Brady goes back to Foxborough and all that stuff. That game was ultimately not particularly meaningful. When the Patriots go to Buffalo next Monday night, that is the game of the year. I'm proclaiming it. Or maybe it's like an aggregate game of the year. Well, I'll split it, you know, split it between the two matchups and go from there. But right now, the Patriots are in control in the AFC East. They hammer the Titans. I was kind of curious to see how this one would unfold, just because Mike Vrabel has given Josh McDaniels such fits in the two times they met as, you know, since Vrabel took over the Titans here. So this one ends up being 36-13 Patriots. Probably not that lopsided a game, but, you know, Titans made a couple mistakes and the Patriots just sort of pounced on it and just distanced themselves in the second half here.
It's mind-blowing to me. I mean, Jenny brought this up on the podcast a few weeks ago, and how we all, you know, And Jenny is obviously, you know, she's so dialed in with Patriot stuff and so smart on Patriot stuff and all stuff in general. But, like, she's like, you know, how didn't we all notice that, like, they're bad at the beginning of the season every year, like every single year. And like, remember, we used to wonder whether it was the downfall of Tom Brady and all this stuff. And then they just build in all these wrinkles week after week after week, and they become more difficult to stop. Like, they had these amoebic sort of Ravens looking defenses out of the gate this week against the Titans. And then you had like, you were giving Jonnu Smith the ball, like, you know, all this stuff that they were just folding in wrinkle after wrinkle after wrinkle. And they're going to be really hard to stop. Like, they have a team that, like, is basically Belichick. If you had to ask him to construct something from scratch, it's like this nameless, faceless defense of all these guys that play super hard and they're exactly where you ask them to be, and then a ball control offense with a quarterback who doesn't make a lot of mistakes. And it's really, like, it's looking good.
It was like early game script was Jonnu Smith heavy, and then they, you know, they can diversify as the game goes on here. And, you know, Mac Jones was, again, you know, there were probably one or two throws you highlight as like, oh, that was phenomenal. He had a great red zone throw to Kendrick Bourne. And, you know, everyone loves good red zone play. That's worth 7 points instead of three. He had another throw to Jacoby Myers downfield, maybe a little bit dangerous, but it got there and ended up being a big play. And a lot of catch and run stuff in this game. So, I mean, that's how they want to do it, and it's how they did it in this one. I will say the Titans were, again, it sounds ridiculous to say, like, yeah, 36-13 loss, but they played pretty well. They did play pretty well in this game. They had each of their running backs lose a fumble. Tannehill throws a fourth and goal interception on the one. Randy Bullock, it took me a second to remember who their kicker is these days. Randy Bullock hits the upright with one field goal, hits the upright on a PAT. I mean, they left a lot of plays on the field here in a game that was, you know, it was 16-13 at halftime, so they're kind of hanging around, but you make that many mistakes against the Patriots, and it's like you don't get a second and third chance here. You just end up getting your butt handed to you.
Yeah, I would say in the Gary Grambling arbitrary point system, right? You give the Titans like a 0.35 wins for effort today. But just back to Mac Jones for a second. The red zone throws were good. That there was like a downfield one he pushed to Jacoby Myers, yep, on the left hand side, and he was 2 for 3 on throws of 20 plus yards today. Like, that's good. That's really good for a quarterback that nobody thought was going to do anything except dink and dunk and doesn't really get out of the pocket. That's phenomenal. That's way better than you'd want. And it's something that, you know, as we go on building all this stuff towards the end of the season, to develop more of a vertical passing game, I think is a tremendous benefit.
Eagles, Giants.
So the Giants get to play a little bit of spoiler here. I guess they're technically like not out of it, but they sort of feel like they're out of it. But they end up beating the Eagles 13-7 at home. I don't really have a take on the Giants' offense at this one. Obviously, Jason Garrett's out. Freddie Kitchens takes over the play-calling duties. The tight ends coach, you all know and love him from his time in Cleveland. It didn't really look like a particularly bold departure from what they do. Saquon Barkley ends up being your leading receiver, and you know, a lot of effort on the ground to pick up not a whole lot of yardage when it's all said and done. I'm looking at Barkley's stat line for the first time, and I've watched most of these snaps, and he did have a 32-yard run, but he finished with 13 for 40, which is not great. But they end up hanging on. It's, you know, defensively, they continue to be pretty good. No Logan Ryan in this one. He's such a key piece to what they do. But they just sort of get in the right spots when it's all said and done. I really like the way their young safeties play here.
Yeah, I mean, this is what Patrick Graham does. I mean, that's the strength of the team. And I thought it was strange that there was this sort of weird tailwind of like passive aggression, like defending Jason Garrett, like, well, why don't you just fire Patrick Graham instead? Well, because the offense was definitely way worse, and the defense has like no pieces. Like, Logan Ryan is a great player, but when Logan Ryan is your best player and entirely central to what you do as a defense, like, you're kind of playing with one hand tied behind your back. You know, you're not able to really throw haymakers. And Leonard Williams is Leonard Williams, but his infatuation, or the organization's infatuation with him is far more in the front office than does it exist, I think, in the rest of the league. And so I think this is not a great defense, but today they played like a great defense. And yeah, offensively, it looked like a Freddie Kitchens offense. You know, things took a little bit too long to develop, and then you tried to cover it by pounding the ball. And so, yeah, it's not exactly a game that, you know, I saw Joe Judge's post-game speech, and he said, "This is us, guys." And if I was anyone on that team, I'd be like, "That sounds horrible. I wouldn't want that." this seems like a terrible way to win games. But, you know, good for them. You know, it's not like – it's not one of those things where you can kind of, you know – put the napkin on the door and say, "How about them apples on the Jason Garrett firing?" But you did what you did.
This was just devastating for the Eagles here, because this is obviously a very winnable game, and they had a couple opportunities to win it. I mean, they end up going to the red zone three times and coming away with a touchdown and nothing else. Basically, 7 points in three red zone trips in a game that you end up losing 13-7 here, and I don't know. Jalen Reagor is always going to be a target for Eagles fans, because for the rest of his career, everyone's just going to look at that draft and be, you know, Justin Jefferson goes one after him, and all these other good receivers go later, and it just hasn't worked out for him so far. It really hasn't worked out for anyone offensively so far in Philadelphia over the last two seasons. He had two just brutal drops in the final minute on what might have been game-winning touchdowns, and I don't know. I don't know how you bounce back from this one. Maybe there's some Nelson Aguilar self-help tape you can listen to at this point and sort of go down that career path.
Yeah, the one, it was weird. He was almost like pushed back into contention on the catch, like where he was able to, you know, there was a lot of hand fighting there, but then actually almost got a better shot at it, it looks like. But yeah, this was tough. I was a big Jalen Reagor fan. I thought this was going to really work out for them. But if you layer that with the Devonta Smith thing, and then you end up kind of just, you know, I mean, that ends up working out a little bit better. That's fine. I mean, I think his ability to get open has been really encouraging, and I think you did nail that pick, but rough game all around. Rough game for Nick Sirianni. I mean, you feel like you probably could have game planned Jalen Hurts, you know, through this one, but yeah, backbreaker, absolute backbreaker.
Chargers, Broncos.
All right, we're opening up the lightning-ish round here with the AFC West, which is so good. Everyone's over 500 in the AFC West, and the Broncos just sort of reassert themselves in this race, and they do it defensively, and they sort of do it in the way that they want to do it. But yeah, this to me felt like a team in the Broncos that is, you know, they're good in the trenches, they're really good in the secondary, going up against a team in the Chargers who kind of have, you know, you have Joey Bosa as your superstar on one side and Derwin James as well. And you have Justin Herbert, who you're asking to carry a heavy load here. And in the end, just the more complete team kind of controlled this game throughout.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, I don't think that, like, just because their quarterback situation isn't necessarily, and I mean, when Teddy Bridgewater's healthy, is playing like as efficient as any quarterback in the NFL, but they have a really good offensive line. They have a great defense on paper, even when they lost Von Miller, and then you activate Bradley Chubb, get him off the IR and get him rolling again. And it's like, this team is really good. Like, you know, and they can really start to, you know, if not just spoil some teams down the stretch, like make the play for that last spot in the playoffs. Like I think everyone wants that. Like, I think the Broncos, when Vic Fangio took over, it was interesting, like, you know, just talking to some people adjacent on that staff, they were like, he wants to build things in a Belichickian sort of way, but not in that, like, naive, oh, I worked for him, you know, I want to do this thing.
Yeah,
but, like,
yeah.
You know, but, like, you know, really sort of values the process of how Bill builds teams and how, you know, he builds coaching staffs and all this stuff. And I think, like, he's made an earnest effort to do that. I mean, it's a ball control offense. It's this really aggressive, amoebic defense. And here, all of a sudden, like, it's all starting to come to fruition for them. And I don't know if it's enough to save his job necessarily, you know, I think, you know, but I think he's certainly making a case, and very impressively without Von Miller. And Drew Lock looked okay today too.
Panthers, Dolphins.
Yeah, so Dolphins going on a little bit of a run here. I think we saw it maybe coming. The Ravens win was a surprise, but they won four straight. They had not given up 17 points or more in any of those games, and this was another dominant defensive performance here. And we'll start on that side of it. Look, that's their identity. That's what they're supposed to be winning games on, and that's what they're doing right now. They're taking the ball away, and they're making quarterbacks just incredibly uncomfortable here. Cam Newton was simply overwhelmed in this game. I mean, he looked like a guy who couldn't get on a roster until November, quite frankly. And a lot of that had to do with what the Dolphins were doing to him defensively.
Yeah, I mean, this was as complete a defensive game plan as we've seen from the Dolphins. Like, it's weird. Like, once you formally exit the Deshaun Watson sweepstakes and start just doubling down on the things that you have and the things that you can do well, the team actually starts to perform pretty decently and turn around. Like, imagine that. But yeah, I mean, it was so bad that Matt Rhule was asked if he was going to bench Cam Newton, and I don't think that was Cam Newton's fault. I think that he was just, like, wholly unprepared for what he saw from Miami today.
Yep, and look, Tua Tagovailoa. Again, this is not like a situation where it's like, oh, you know, this is a quarterback really carrying his team. Obviously, he's benefiting from what they're doing defensively at this point. I mean, they open up the scoring with a block punt touchdown. They end up getting three interceptions in this game, so it was a lot of heavy lifting by the defense. But again, you just sort of see flashes from him, and I don't want to overstate this, but I also don't want to understate it. You see flashes of his play within the pocket, and they don't ask him to do a ton of it. It's still a lot of rollout stuff. It's still a lot of dink and dunk type of stuff. But every once in a while, like when they ask him to function within the pocket, he's doing it. And he's moving comfortably and like a normal starting quarterback instead of getting exceedingly panicky back there like he was early in the season. And it just kind of looks like, okay, this is probably not a guy you would label like surefire franchise quarterback right now, but you'd say, okay, yeah, this is a guy who we can function with at this point.
Yeah, and the crazy thing is like, we're all praising Mac Jones, for example, right? But he has one of the five best offensive lines in the NFL and a coach who has, been known for trotting out consistently some of the best offensive lines in the NFL. Tua does not have one of the best offensive lines in the NFL by any stretch. And I don't think, go from Alabama to the NFL where there is zero similarities there in terms of you being able to have time to get your feet set, to get comfort, to roll out and not have somebody immediately on your path. And so for somebody who's had to completely teach your body to do different things and your eyes and your mind and everything like that, I think he's doing a pretty good job.
Jets, Texans.
All right, so this was nice for the Jets. This is a game where they go on the road, maybe not against a great opponent, but they go on the road and they fall behind, and then they come back and win it, and in a fairly comfortable fashion here. We know they've had all sorts of issues defensively. They didn't give up a point in the second half, and that's it just sort of feels like a step forward when it's all said and done. Zach Wilson was fine. I mean, he had one sort of miscommunication, tried to shovel a pass out late in the down, and the dude had already turned around, hit his back, got intercepted, and that's just, who hasn't done that among us? But the story of this one is, we've written like 20,000 words on the Texans and what's going on in that organization, and they just sort of still make you scratch your head every once in a while. Justin Reed, who's one of their, I don't want to overstate it as a building block, but I think he's one of the few guys on this roster you'd look at and identify like, okay, yeah, this is a guy 5 years from now, we want him to be a part of this. He's good enough to keep on this roster and, be a solid foundational piece for this defense. They end up deactivating him. And he seemed confused by the whole thing. He said, he had a disagreement with the coaches. He didn't think it was, anything particularly, out of line or any animosity that sort of, went overboard. And they just told him on Friday, like, we're deactivating you for whatever happened between him and the coaches. So they play without Justin Reed. They're hosting the Jets, and they just, whatever. They just, once again, don't really look like an NFL team. And I'm not sure, I don't know. What does that say to your guys on your roster? What does it say to anyone who might join your roster? I mean, money is how you get guys to join, but I don't know, is anyone going out of their way to head down to Houston if they're not getting overpaid severely when it's all said and done? It just seems like a really weird thing to do.
It reminds me of the time that I told you that I didn't care for Earl Grey tea, and then all of a sudden I was pulled from NFL coverage.
Well, that was going over the line, yeah. I hope he didn't say that to Lovie Smith. My goodness.
The Texans are, God love anybody, you know, Tyrod Taylor and all those guys for putting on a happy face, but this has got to be one of the weirdest places to exist on Earth. I think that even anybody in tangentially in their orbit feels that. And, you know, the fact that they've been remotely in any of these games has been somewhat impressive. If I'm one of the two or three guys that are going at the top of the draft, I'm just like, man, I hope things just happen just a little different here. You know, like one of these guys that's going to get drafted at the top of the draft, like, aren't you thinking about, you know, I'm a one-trick pony. I wrote this about Trevor Lawrence last year. I know that. But, you know, aren't you thinking about maybe not or pulling an Eli Manning or something like that?
It's going to be weird because I don't think any quarterback's going number one overall.
No.
And so if you're a non-quarterback, do you make that stance? I mean, yeah, I don't know, Kayvon Thibodeau or Derek Stingley or Hamilton, the Notre Dame safety. I don't know. That's a weird stance to make for a non-quarterback, and it's one that the Texans can probably live with if that's the way it is. Maybe yeah. You just rather know that up front that someone doesn't want to be there, and then it's like, all right, we'll get someone who wants to maybe deal with this really weird stuff we do.
Yeah, for Kyle Hamilton or, you know, Aiden Hutchinson or, you know, I don't know, any of these guys. Like, it'd be so great. So they tried to draft, like, George Karloftis, and he was just like, no. Like, you know, it was just like, Karloftis, pulling a Manning, you know?
Falcons, Jaguars.
All right, so our last game of the day, although we do have a little bit of a coaching talk to get to after this one is done. But, yeah, the Falcons and the Jaguars played, and the Falcons won, and the score was 21-14. And I don't know. Again, I think it's cool that the Falcons are playing hard and winning. I think these were two teams that were very evenly matched. I think if you were going to have, like, the tournament of sadness, this was like the final four today with like the Falcons and the Jaguars and the Texans and the Jets. And now like the Jets and Falcons would play the championship of this mini tournament, although they already played in London. So we already know the Falcons were the champions of this thing.
What's the third college basketball tournament? It's the NCAAs, the NITs, and then, it's the CBI,
the CBI,
right?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. They are the, they're the CBI. Like I remember, I don't know why I remember this, but like when I was a little kid, like I thought that all basketball tournaments were like really important. And I used to like read the sports section of the newspaper before my dad came home and like tell him all the important things I needed to know. And I was like, Nebraska won the CBI. And I just remember him being like, oh, like that's a weird thing for you to tell me. And then like being like, oh, why isn't that important? And
I knew today felt different.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, this is like, it's like that. The Falcons are the winners of the CBI. So they have a nice little mid-major program going on there, and maybe they'll be able to fill up their humble 12,000-seat gymnasium for next year's home opener.
All right, one more thing before we go here. We are not going to talk college football, but as most of you know, Lincoln Riley, the Oklahoma coach, has left to take the USC job, but we are going to talk about that briefly because the rumor, the Adam Schefter tweet, which therefore makes it a rumor, I guess, is that Oklahoma is interested in Cliff Kingsbury, the current coach of the Arizona Cardinals. Therefore, it is NFL. I don't know how to read this besides Cliff Kingsbury's waiting for his new contract from the Cardinals and now is the time to strike when you are 9-3 and, a big college program has an opening.
Yeah, I mean, I applaud Cliff Kingsbury for doing it like a college coach, right? I mean, all these college coaches got, when the USC job opened, how many coaches got 10-year extensions? Like Mel Tucker, James Franklin, all these guys got like, you know, Dave Aranda, like gigantic, like decade-long extensions to stay there, right? And so if you're Cliff Kingsbury, you're like, hey, the iron's hot. Time to move in here. And I think he's done a good enough job. I don't think he's ever going to leave the NFL. I think that if you told a college coach, now, Gary, I know that you and I differ on this, but I think if you told a college coach that you could be successful in the NFL just because of the lifestyle, what you'd be able to, you know, the life you'd be able to lead there, you're going to make that jump 10 times out of 10. And so I think Cliff Kingsbury is probably infinitely happy there. You know, if he wants, I would leave to go to Oklahoma, but that's just because I like being on a college campus. But, you know, and unless he really feels that way, I don't think he's leaving Oklahoma. And it was funny how the report was written, right? Because it was like the Cardinals or they might target Cardinals coach Cliff Kingsbury, according to Adam Schefter. Kingsbury has 1 year left on his contract. And it's like, yeah, okay. So you're basically just copying, pasting that and sending that to Cardinals general manager Steve Keim. It's like, okay, all right, I got it. Here's an extension.
Yeah, it's like even on the other side, I mean, you know, Urban Meyer, Matt Rhule, maybe jury's still out on Matt Rhule. But these guys, I don't know, anyone making a jump. No one should jump from college to NFL, and no one should jump from NFL to college anymore.
Well, it's interesting, right? I was talking to a few people who are kind of plugged in on this coaching search process, and I think that Urban Meyer and I think Matt Rhule, though, I think Matt Rhule's seat's a little bit hotter than people are talking about right now in Carolina, which is interesting, but I think that their transitions have really sort of been that rubber stamp on, like, oh man, like, you know, if you're a college coach, you don't want to do that, right? Because I've seen how hard it is. I see how kind of out of sorts you look. And so I don't feel like doing that. And I think it's the other way too, right? Where I think that NFL teams are looking at this and saying, yeah. And so Lincoln Riley, you know, to kind of put a bookend on this, was that next guy. I think that everyone expected to sort of make that jump to the NFL. I think him going to USC can kind of formally close the book on that. I don't think there are any coaches outside of maybe Matt Campbell from Iowa State that would even make that jump to the NFL at this point. Like, I think if he wanted to go, I think he could interview well and he could get a job in the NFL, but he's a different kind of coach. Like, he's not your typical, like, college coach. I think he's a guy that would do really well in the NFL, but I don't think this is happening again for a while, unless it's Campbell. I really don't. And Lincoln Riley was that last step there. To leave Oklahoma and to go to USC in that manner, you're essentially sort of, you know, taking that last guy off the market. And I think that once Urban and Rhule are not in the NFL anymore, I think it's going to be kind of homogenous here for a couple of years.
The MMQB NFL podcast is Connor Orr and me, Gary Grantling. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Thanks, as always, to senior podcast producer Dan Bloom. Mark Mravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB, and Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL podcast. Be sure to subscribe to this feed on Apple Podcasts, and once you do, leave a rating and review, because it really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.